Blog
All right, it sounds
radio.
Like we're live.
And welcome to Garage Talk Live, ladies and gentlemen. I love that song. I don't know about y'all, but makes a good theme song for this show anyway at the beginning. Anyway, today we have a very special guest. She is a casting director, actress, or is it actor? I don't know. We'll straighten that out. Depends on, I guess, how you gender identify. And a panelist on the up-and-coming new hit podcast, They Shall Live, hosted by a guy that you've probably heard on this show a few times, played Dale Earnhardt Sr. and Colonel Sanders, Jeff Sandor. He is the host, and I'd like to welcome to the show for her debut appearance, the one, the only, Jen Inguli, and I should say also I've listened to that podcast as well, and she's a good trivia winner. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you, Vinny. Thanks for having me on the show. I don't know if I'd say I'm good at trivia. Maybe I had beginner's luck.
Beginner's luck three times in a row?
Yeah.
Come on.
That's fun. It's fun. I'm always amazed when I get something right.
Well, you know, it's always good to get a pat on the back and do something. And, you know, it's not like we'll get into that a little more later. But threw it to you. I will have everybody from the panel on. I know one of them, Chase, is writing a book, so we'll get him to promote that. And then I guess we'll get some groupthink in here and go back and forth. And this here is live,
yeah.
So we will not edit it down. And if you ever want to join again, and hopefully you'll have a good time today and be happy to come back. Now, I gather you're Italian with the name Inguli, and you're from New York, which is your little Long Island girl looking for some the dating game. Bit, and you went to James Madison University in Virginia. What made you want to go that far south for an education?
You know, it's funny because I am a New Yorker, but I always say, like, what's that phrase? I'm not from the South, but I got here as fast as I could. I mean, truly, I went from New York actually to Washington, D.C. because I got into school at Catholic University in like their music education program, but it wasn't a place or a major that I wanted to continue. So after a little, like about a year or so, I transferred to James Madison. And I don't know, you know what it was? I mean, I don't know if you've been to you live close by, I know, but Harrisonburg, that entire campus, it was just such a beautiful place and a really, just the feel of the mountains. You know, being from Long Island, very flat up there in the beachy. So like, it was like, oh, I didn't know I love the mountains. And it was great. I really never wanted to leave there. It was so beautiful.
Well, that's pretty, I'm a, what they call down here, a damn Yankee as well, you know, from Philly in the South Jersey. And, when the time came to get out, it should have been sooner rather than later, but, you know, situations are the way they are. And
right.
When the time came, out we got. And, yeah, and it's funny, you know, when I asked how you found this place, well, my wife went looking for real estate. We used to go to the NASCAR races in Charlotte, come back up I-81 and stuff like that through here. And
right.
We'd see these billboards for land really, really cheap. I mean, really cheap, acres upon acres for less than what I had for my little parcel up there. And we should have bought it then and just sat on it, but, you know, you didn't know where it is. It could be off the beaten path and that type of thing. So
right.
We finally found somebody. She was one that said she could live on a mountain with nobody around. And I said, well, I got to have people close by just in case something happens. Well, guess what? We live on a mountain with nobody around, but people are close enough by in case something happens.
Perfect.
And,
I worked at a ski resort after I graduated, James Madison, if you know Massanutten Ski Resort. And
mm-hmm.
that whole area is just so lovely, talking about being on a mountainside. I could most definitely live there. There's a secret plan in my head to eventually get back there someday because I loved it so much.
Well, the county I live in, if you want to start looking for some dirt, it's only got about 6,800 people.
What town is it again, Vinny?
It's a little town called Bastion, and the county is Bland. It lives up to its name, believe me.
Okay, I will. I'll look at that. I don't know if I've actually been there before.
You probably haven't, because if you, coming from Harrisonburg and James Madison, you probably shot down 81 and down 77
yep.
South through Withville, Hillsville, into Carolina that way. And if you went just a few miles south of the South 77 exit to get on North 77 to go to Bluefield, West Virginia, which is the target of the, you know, the signboards there. It'll tell you Bluefield, which is about 20 miles north. Well, when it's kind of weird, you get I-77 shared with I-81. So you get I-77 north shared with I-81 south with 52 north and 11 south. It's like four roads. The 11 and 52 are like what they call byways, or we call them side, you know, the back roads. And pretty weird how that is. It's kind of confusing if it's your first time down here trying to figure out which way to go when you get into that cluster. And but lo and behold, it's a pretty nice space. I go from where
yeah.
I live right now to where I go to my day job, I do not hit one traffic light.
Yeah, Vinny, I'm looking it up right now, and my goodness, you are in the complete mountain area, it looks like, west of Christiansburg, where, what is that, VMI is there, or I forget which one is there.
There's so many there. There's JMU, VMI, Virginia Tech, Radford U. It's like
Oh,
College
Virginia
Central.
Tech, that's probably what it is. Yeah, exactly. But you, yeah, you're out there, you know, kind of in the mountain area. That looks really nice.
Yeah, do you like rainbows?
I do.
We get them often, singles, doubles.
How interesting. So I guess you have rain and sun.
Yeah, we have one of my Facebook pictures is a rainbow taken off my deck at eye level.
Wow. I love it. Well, you know, I don't think that JMU is, you know, or even where you are is technically south. Like when I moved over the border into Raleigh-Durham after I left Massanutten Ski Resort, I moved to Raleigh, then I really feel like I got into the south, quote, the south. And I've been in North Carolina for almost 15, 20 years now. So I feel like
wow.
I'm a transplant. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, we're both transplants, but this is south. I mean, we're like 30 miles, 90 miles from Tennessee, right, the Bristol area. So, but you're into the east coast of Carolina, what I like to call Hurricane Watch Alley.
Yes. I was thinking about, I'm in Wilmington now because I moved from Raleigh to Wilmington in 2008 to get into film and TV because there was a lot of film and TV here at the time. We don't know what's going to happen with that, but we'll get into that. But yeah, this hurricane that just came up the coast, I was watching, I'm like, Wilmington truly is like the first spot that juts out on the East Coast. It's like we're a bullseye for hurricanes.
Yeah. Well, I was, back in my military days, I was stationed in the Marine Corps Auxiliary Landing Field in Bogue, which is maybe not too far north of Wilmington, and they were talking about hurricane evacuation routes and all this kind of stuff. And you know what?
Yep.
The 2.5 years I was there, not a one. They went south of me. They went north of me.
Wow, you really lucked out.
Yeah, I did. And, you know, I mean, up in Jersey, we got hit with a few that we weren't on the coast, but you get the aftermath and all the rain, but not the storm surges and the flooding. I don't have to worry
right.
about flooding here. I live on a mountain.
Yeah, Long Island, we got hurricanes also. I mean, it just always seemed like, they passed through, it was a storm, the trees down, that kind of thing. But yeah, here on the coast, there's all sorts of complications. Florence, as you know, just devastated our area for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Well, really more than that, obviously, but like I wasn't able to get back. I left town. I wasn't able to get back for like 11 days because roads were washed out and the flooding was so bad. But yeah, it's fun.
Well, a couple of years ago, I think it was 20, time so flies so fast when you get older, and my unit had a reunion down at Bogue, and we were down there in early June, and about a week or two later, they got hammered. I mean, everything was washing away.
Hmm.
So you were probably there at the time, too.
What was this again? When was this?
2018.
Or was it a...
I'm not in Florida.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that area got socked.
Yes.
We were supposed to have a reunion this year, but good old COVID-19 came on and blasted everybody into hiding.
Into 2021, hopefully.
We're planning on that.
In 2021.
Yeah, we're planning on one down there, and when I get down there, I hope to get together with you and Jeff, because they're not going to be too far away.
Oh, that'll be great.
Yeah,
I can't wait till we do the show like video. That'll be so much fun so we can actually see each other.
I have to figure out how to get my laptop camera to work then, because normally I go through my phone, unless you're going to have some fancy stuff come in, because my home internet is, get this, DSL. That's all they have here.
That's the one thing with the being in the mountains, right?
Yeah. Now, they do have other options, satellite internet, Usenet or Exceed or whatever they call themselves these days. And, of course, cell phone carriers. As far as, like, television, we have satellite. And, you know, in the wintertime, if you want to watch TV, you got to go in and if you got snow on your dish, you got to go sweep it off. And I don't want to have to do that with the two dishes.
Oh, goodness, that's funny.
But it is lovely here, and I do get some visitors on my deck, like bears and foxes and skunks. I haven't had a fox in a while, but they have skunks, possums, raccoons, and Mr. Bear has been showing up of late. He likes cat food.
Well, if you feed, no, actually, you're just leaving it out for the cat, I'm sure. But the bear has found it.
Yeah, but we just go out and chase him off, tell him to go home, and he leaves.
I have a friend here in town that she is a bear person. Like, you know, some people are cat people or whatever. Like, bears are her thing. And she just loves going on trips to the mountain areas in Tennessee and stuff and communing with the bears. Funny.
Wow. I mean,
I know, right?
It's partially to the area I live, because Jefferson National Forest borders my property. So they just mosey on down in the spring when they wake up from hibernation and go looking for food. But
yep.
I wouldn't want to pester my mama and her cubs. But for the most part, the average black bear is not aggressive. Now, these people that want to go out and touch grizzly bears, you know, that's a little ridiculous. So. So you went to D.C. for music.
Yeah, originally, because I got into school there in the music education program, because in high school I was playing piano and I sang and I was in theater and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm in casting now and I do acting myself. So my focus became about, you know, either being on stage or behind the scenes or whatever in theater. And so the music education thing, I was like, I don't want to be a teacher. So I went to pursue, you know, theater instead. And James Madison had an arts administration kind of a part of their theater program. So I went in that direction. And then when I graduated from JMU, then I moved down to Raleigh and I started working like in a theater down there. So I've always kind of had that in my background, because I really just like it. It's fascinating acting.
So you went from piano and wanting to be a music teacher. Like, I was in the high school band and the jazz band. I played a few different instruments. I'll keep it clean. You know where I can go with that. But
well, yeah, I played it, you know, because I was musical and, you know, just creative in general, being in music and theater. But it was really my dad. Like, my parents wanted me to, like, get a real job. Like, you can't be an actor. That's ridiculous. You need a secure job. So the whole music education was more along their lines of plan for my life. So I was like, sorry, I guess I don't really like job security.
Isn't it funny how parents want you to do this, do that, and the other thing? You say, yeah. Then you get to the age, it's like the age of rebellion. Sorry, folks. I'm doing it this way.
Yeah. Got to do what works for me. Sorry.
I bet they were kind of shocked when you decided to come south.
Yeah. I think that they were, yeah. I don't know exactly. I mean, I had applied to, what, like 9 schools when I was still in New York. And the reason why that came through, and it's going to be heartbreaking to hear, but, like, I applied to 9 schools undecided, all of them except for Catholic U. Like, I wanted to just explore and see what college is about. And to, like I said, my dad wanted it so badly that I applied to Catholic U, music ed, for him. And not only did I get in, but I got a 4-year full tuition scholarship. And we were I had one of 5 children. And it was like, this is where you're going to go, you know, that kind of a thing. And that's what took me south to begin with from New York.
Fine little Catholic Italian girl, right? the stigma of being Italian.
Well, my dad is Italian, obviously, right? So his dad is from Sicily, but my mom is from Canada, like Newfoundland, Canada, and of Irish descent. And so I've got like super white skin, really, really pale with dark hair, you know. It's a combination of them both.
Well, it's a good combination. You look rather well. So.
Thank you.
So you graduate JMU and go to Raleigh for theater. And did you go for theater first and casting directing, or did the casting director become an opportunity while you were doing theater?
Well, basically what happened was the casting directing came later. When I got to Raleigh, I started in theater and then I got completely off track. I was just like working in graphic design and doing other things. And then I thought, you know, I need to, you know, get myself back to my creative, you know, aspirations with acting, theater, that kind of thing. And I had never pursued film and TV up until that point. I didn't really know much about it. But I had a friend from Long Island, from New York, who had become a director and quite a successful director in Los Angeles. And so I started talking to him about things, and I said, I just, you know, can I explore your world a little just because I've never seen it? And he says, yeah, you know, like he was up in New York shooting a commercial one time. I saw him there. I spent a few days in L.A. seeing him out there and seeing his on-set stuff. And as soon as I did, it was like, oh, this is where all my people are. So I knew I was on the right track. I just needed to figure out what capacity, you know, you could be a producer, you could be a director, you could be an actor, you could do all of these different things. But with the skills that I had picked up along the way, I'd had done sales before and, you know, other things, and I really love acting and actors, that it made sense to combine the business skills I picked up with the love of acting with, I'm not kidding, human psychology, because you really need that when you're you're interacting with a lot of really creative people when you're in casting, like you work with the producers and the director and the writer. And so it's truly trying to figure out what they want, because that's what your job is, to give them the actors that fulfill the role that will make their film or TV show stand out. So it's true, like you think casting is just like picking actors, which of course it is, but it's also this whole other side of understanding the creative team, and they're very unpredictable, let me tell you.
I bet there's probably a lot of strong personalities that you have to deal with and say, okay, I gotta find, see, this one's headstrong, this one's laid back, this one's kind of this, and this one's kind of that, and I got to find somebody that's going to appeal to all, however many of them you got to deal with, right?
That's exactly right. I've been trying to say it delicately. You just said it the exact right way.
Wow.
And so, and you, I mean, creative people are not necessarily like, they don't stay within the box. You know what I'm saying? They go outside the box. So getting to know their personalities is really, really important. It's actually trying to understand the director, how they think, or the producer, how they think, or, for example, figuring out the tone of a television show, because that's their baby. You know, they created it from the ground up. And so you have to fill their world with characters that fit their vision. And it's tricky. It's a challenge, but it's also fun, you know, if you like that sort of thing.
Now, that does sound like fun. I wish I'd have. I don't know. I'm intrigued by your what you do. We'll have to talk more about it off the record.
Okay. Yeah, just don't be fooled, though, because there's a whole lot of work involved in casting. It is fun.
Oh, I'm sure.
But, oh, my goodness, there's a lot of work. A lot of administrative stuff. So, yeah. It's a whole ball of wax.
One of your friends is a director, so I'm sure you're pretty in tune with his ideas. And do you have your own company or talent?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yes, he and I, which is so beautiful, like 10 years, well, not even. It was more like 7 years after he helped me kind of get into it. We ended up working on a series together. It was so amazing. Like, it was shooting in Atlanta. So I'm a Southeastern casting director. So I was able to work with my friend who helped me get into the industry. It was amazing. But the way casting works is that it's usually comprised of like one or two people total in an office. And it's really about your style and, you know, how you work. That's that works well with the creative team. And it's like, yes, you have basically, you're a contractor, you're hired by the producers. So you could be, you know, I don't have a quote company because it's really just me, but I have like an LLC, you know, other company. So you could just be yourself. You could be Jen and Gully Casting or Matt Suffolk Casting. Or you can have two people, like I started in an office in L.A. with Gail Pillsbury and Bonnie Zane, and they called themselves Zane Pillsbury Casting. You see what I'm saying? So they're rather small offices.
Okay, that's what I was trying to figure out. If, I guess years ago, everybody worked for a certain studio, like MGM or Paramount or a thing like that. And with all independent stuff coming, I guess, does anybody actually use that anymore, or is that just for distribution now?
The studios are, again, the studios will hire, production teams will hire, you know, and the producers will hire casting. So, no, we're not like studio casting. Everybody's kind of independent casting offices now.
Well, that's interesting. And how does it go?
At those levels, just so that you know, Vinny, at those levels, like Fox Studios or, you know, whatever, CW, they have internal casting departments that help with like the really, really high end players. Hang on 1 second. Okay. With the high-end players, like, so when they're starting a television show or a movie or something like that, they'll have relationships with all the casting offices throughout the country, right? And so Fox Studios would have an internal casting, like executive casting people who work with, like, the celebrity, you know, high-end folks. Like, it's hard to explain. So LA casting, there's Southeastern casting, like where I am, that's called regional casting. But you're right, the studios have internal casting executive level folks as well, because they're the ones who actually approve the choices that we get here in my region or in LA's region or whatever. if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. So they book all the big names, and you get they throw it out to, okay, give me so-and-so, and here's some scripts, have them, you know, then I guess you send them to the agents, and then they send them to the performers.
Actors. Mm-hmm. That's
actors.
Exactly right, yep.
And then it makes its way back up the food chain to you. They'll send the video, I guess, to you, and then you'll review it and decide whether to move it on or kick it back.
Yep. That's right, that's right. It's interesting because actors, so that's an important designation to understand, like, how the casting chain works, because it is still very regionally oriented. Like, if a production films in Atlanta, the reason why they bring in a local casting director such as myself is because they want to bring in local talent to help save the production money, right? But we're only one component. So say The Walking Dead is being filmed in Georgia and we cast locally here on the ground. They also have an LA casting office that's working on the same show at the same time. And usually, and this has been traditionally, LA casting has the access to bigger talent. You know what I'm saying? Like names or people who are just more experienced. What's wonderful and what I have seen in the last 10 years is that the Southeast has grown so much, especially in the Atlanta market, that there is so much production on the ground in Atlanta and throughout the Southeast that many of the actors are moving to this area, and it's just stepping up the game in general. And so we are getting some opportunities at bigger roles in the Southeast and the Mid-Atlantic that rival talent in LA. So those two components are important to understand. And then, of course, what you said, the studio levels are always searching for, like, the giant people all over the earth. They're going to bring in the big celebrities or whatever. But, yes, what we do, like, casting is basically the vetters. Like, we have – our job is to know the talent in our region. And so when we have roles, we send those roles to the agents who are representing all of the actors, because you have to realize, like, there are 30, 40,000 actors just in the Southeast alone. And so if we would try to, you know, release to them only, it would be crazy trying to go through all of those actors. So we defer to the agents. They're like our best friend. They bring us the actors. We ask their actors to tape for roles, and then we choose amongst those. Of course, that's our job, is to watch them and make sure, you know, they're doing their job and they're good for the roles. We pick a certain number of actors that we feel are the best for the role, and they kind of cover an array of it's just like a casting a wider net to see what's going to hit, and then we send it up to the production team, and they're the ones who decide who they want to cast in the roles.
Gotcha. Yeah, so it's like a multi-tiered process of, like you said, 30,000 actors in the area working at a restaurant near you, probably.
Yeah, that's very funny. Probably.
No, I'm just saying.
I have to get the most accurate number because, I mean, years ago it was 30,000. It's got to be way more
right.
than that now.
Oh, of course. But it was just like you have this vast majority of actors and to go to, like, I guess where you come in a lot more important is if someone wants to start a show, a miniseries, something, with people that you don't recognize. Nobody, you know, there's the big talent, but usually if some of these shows that don't have big name talent, so that's where the importance of someone in your position, in your area, goes, I guess, a longer way than a big studio trying to land somebody that's a major name, and where, in the other instance, somebody that you might have got to the production team that picked could become a major name in the future.
Indeed, that's very true. It could. And that's exciting, you know, like you have the opportunity to launch people's careers, you know. It's exciting.
I'm just kind of curious, like, the production teams come to you and say, I don't know, what are some of the things they come to you and say, okay, I need male, female that can do X, Y, and Z, and what are some of the X, Y's, and Z's that you have to look for?
Well, often what's happened is it's determined by the actual project. So say they hire you for a TV show or they hire you for a movie, the first thing that you're going to look at is the script, right? And so because most of the casting I've done has been on television shows like Queen of the South or Homeland I've done, you know, like you know that the show itself, you read the scripts, you understand what's going on with the characters, and then basically with TV, it's broken down by episode, right? So say there might be 13 episodes in a season, you start off the season and you have a creative concept call with the whole team. And you say, all right, here we go, episode one of season four, or whatever. There are this many roles that we're looking for, and say that there are seven, who knows, right? We have seven roles, very clear who they are from reading the script. We need a receptionist, we need a lawyer, we need a doctor, whatever it is. And the whole entire team, the executive producer, the producers, the writer, the director, LA casting, local casting, everybody's on the call. All hash it out. And usually, you know, obviously with TV, the executive producer is the decision maker. Like they've got showrunners that make the decisions. And so, but everybody's a part of the creative team, so they're all their input is there. So we'll say, all right, here's the role of receptionist. What kind of qualities are you looking for in this person? Is there a prototype, you know, or you could have a villain for that particular episode. And there's actually a name, Vincent, you know, whatever the role is. And you create what's called a breakdown for each of the roles. And once you get all of those things written out after the creative call, you have to get approval from the production team that everything on that breakdown is accurate and what they were looking for. And sometimes they tweak it, you know, what's the age range, what's the ethnicity, what are you looking for as far as personality traits. And so we get that all squared away. They approve the breakdown of these seven roles. We decide who's looking for the roles. Like, is it LA only? Is it the Southeast only? Or is it both? You know, sometimes we'll both look. But the Southeastern region is kind of short on some ethnicities. So LA sometimes has the advantage there. But yeah, that's the whole process. Like, we'll take the breakdown, release it to the agents. And then the agents will be like, okay, Victor, the villain, he is this ethnicity and this age range. And then they go to their roster and they look who's appropriate. And then they'll submit their headshots for those people on their roster they feel is appropriate. And like I told you, there's 30, 40,000 actors. There are almost 300 agents in the Southeast alone. So all of those agents are submitting on this one breakdown, you know, for one episode of your show. It's quite involved because they can submit amongst all the agencies in the Southeast, they could easily submit up to like 500 to 800 people for a role.
Wow.
So for one role, that's one of seven. So our role as a casting director to go through and pick who we want to audition. And in the Southeast, it's all digital, and it has traditionally been in person in LA and New York. But after this pandemic, I'm telling you, I think everything's going to be digital now.
I think it has its ups and downs. I mean, you don't have to pay travel fees or anything like that, or they don't have to get out there. So I guess for the actor, it's cost effective. For the casting director, it's cost effective. And you can probably just watch this guy's audition video and say, nope, 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 nope. We'll give him a look.
Yeah. The whole thing has changed, especially in the Southeast, over the last 10 to 15 years. And there are distinct advantages and disadvantages. And, of course, the art of it all is the thing that kind of gets lost when you go digital, because you really like that process of being able to see a human being in person. You know, that's sort of the most shocking thing for me, coming from Los Angeles. You know, I was there for about a year and a half when I first started, and everything there is in person, everything. And you come to the Southeast and you literally never see an actor. You just don't. They're all on your computer. So it was a weird transition, but you are right in that this affords actors great opportunities because they don't have to drive. You know, like, they don't have to go in person anymore. They can do it in their house or in a taping facility or something like that. So it's just made the whole casting process way more global, and it's going to just continue to go in that direction now that there's been a shutdown. It's been interesting watching Los Angeles. They're all learning the ropes, and we're like, we've been doing this for years here in the Southeast.
They're in the panic. You're cruising.
Yeah, we're cruising. We're like, let me tell you, here's the sheet of paper that tells you how to self-tape. You know, like, they're all wondering how to make it work. Because it is hard for actors, you know, to go and figure out lighting and sound and getting the right camera and all that stuff. So,
and you have to do that for an audition in your home somewhere.
Correct.
Wow.
A lot of actors, it's really up to the actor. Like, if they have the ability to, or the finances, you know, to get the equipment, and you don't really have to spend a ton of money. I mean, phones these days have cameras that are amazing. So it's not like it's rocket science or really, really expensive. It's just personal preference, because some actors are like, I don't want to deal with all of that technology and uploading a file and editing, and, you know, they don't want to do all that. So there are plenty of taping facilities who have picked up on this as a job opportunity, you know, and there are lots and lots and lots of them in Atlanta, especially.
Now, you're in the Southeast region, there's LA. How many regions around the country are there?
You can have filming pretty much anywhere, but the main regions are Los Angeles, New York, and now Atlanta has become a third hub. And then, of course, there's Canada, like Vancouver and, you know, Toronto and those areas. And Canada also have a lot of filming opportunities.
I do, because there's a lot of shows and stuff being filmed north of the border, as we say.
Yes.
It's just amazing that what the whole process is that you don't really see as a viewer of a show. And, you know, you see the thing, oh, next season on, and or season a series premiere coming on. How long does the planning process to the actual filming of the show take?
That is a question that, I mean, anybody's guess. It depends upon what it is, because people do short films. They've got this new station called Quibi, you know, like really tiny little things. Then, there, of course, there are blockbuster movies. There are, you know, it just depends upon what it is. It could take years to get something going, because the biggest challenge, especially for, like, indie filmmakers who are trying to do shorts or features on their own, is the funds, you know, getting the investors and getting the money. So those folks can take years to get something rolling. They get a good script. They get a good, you know, crew on board. But television show, like, that's a totally different animal, because they are dealing at the studio level and trying to figure out, yeah, I don't know if you've ever heard the terminology pilot season, kind of changed dramatically over the years. It used to be like basically pilot season was between end of January, beginning of January to end of April, somewhere in there. And it was like a nutty time where all the pilot, you know, script writers are putting their materials in and getting produced and being greenlit by the studios to see if it's even something that would, you know, work. And then they'd have the upfronts, which is a decision-making process in May. But now that this pandemic's happened, but also long before that, it started being like, why are we getting pilots in October now? Like, it's just like free for all, basically, how much the industry has changed. So it's yet to be seen. We are anxiously awaiting now, because it's about time. I think things are going to start opening up again. I'm seeing a little bit of movement because people are just really want to work. But it's a scary thing to put actors on a set during a pandemic, you know? So they're trying to figure out how that's all going to play out. Hopefully they will sooner than later.
Well, it's kind of, unless, you know, you're dealing with something with, I guess, a lot of extras or anything like that, you can get a core show together, have them self-quarantine prior to filming and make sure they're clear. I mean, there's ways to do it. I think some of these people that can afford to stay at home in their multi-million-dollar mansions, big-name stars, but the regular actor that doesn't have that fame and recognition, there's probably a safe way to get to where you can film something and get it out there. And it's just whether, you know, the big production companies want to do it or not. And because I know there's a horror film actress, she was in Halloween 5, and she does a lot of independent productions and stuff like that, and she's starting to do stuff as well. Her name is Tamara Glenn. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she's one of my favorite friends. She's starting to go out and she produces a lot. She's in Terrifier 2 and some other ones. And she's going to do signings and things and shows, so you can check her out. She has her own, I think, public page and personal page, but she was originally supposed to, as cast as it was an independent online show called Hillbilly Horror Show out of Roanoke, Virginia. One of the actors was on a show that I watched called Gallery of Guns, hosted by him. His name was Bo Keister, honest to God, that's his name. And Anne-Marie Rhodes, who was the first ever Miss Sprint Cup, who wound up working for Maryland's agency, who supplied the Miss Sprint Cup talent. It was up to, I guess, Sprint, whoever to pick. And she wound up being an agent. And our friend Jeff was one of her clients. That's how we met.
Wow.
Small world, huh?
It is a small world, right?
And
I know the name Bo Keister. I know Bo. Does he do acting as well?
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing now, but they did a few episodes of this, but Tamara said she never did the show, I guess.
Yeah, I'm looking at the show right now. I don't see her name.
TamaraGlynn.
Tamara Glynn. Oh, I know. Okay, yeah. GLY. All right, sorry. I'm looking everybody up as we're speaking. Because I know that name too. All right, Tamara Glynn. Yep, I see her. She's not represented right now. But my goodness, she's done a lot of films.
Yeah, she's, I met her through that. She was supposed to play, they had a young lady from this area. I can give you her name too. She's out in LA now, so she's, but she played Lulu, and if you ever which is one of Cousin Lulu, and these are like some couple of country guys in a trailer watching horror movies, and they were the behind the scene, and then they show bits of the movies and stuff like that. So.
Is her name Rachel?
Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L Faulkner,
mm-hmm.
F-A-U-L-K-E-N-K-N-E-R.
Yeah, I saw her name on the Hillbilly Horror Show. Okay,
yeah.
Bo Peter, yeah, was definitely an actor at Maryland's that I've seen for years. So now I guess he's into producing. That's pretty cool.
So, like I said, I started, well, I knew Anne Marie was a Miss Sprint Cup, and then she told me she was going to go host this, so I started watching that. And with him, so I had him on and started that. He wanted to promote that, so I had the whole cast on, minus Tamara, because she wasn't on the cast at the time. And which, when that went their way, and then Anne-Marie was talking about Jeff playing Dale Earnhardt, being my show normally is motorsports, even though I had a lot of racing this weekend, I'd rather have you on, because I can talk racing anytime, having interesting people from interesting walks of life doing interesting things is what I do, and none of my questions are pre-written. There you go. I like when people go, can you send me a list of questions? I say, I don't pre-write questions. I'll ask you a question, you answer it, and I'll go to the next question from there. So that's just my method. I try to keep it conversational, as you can tell. So,
yep.
Kind of different
organic.
From your current thing, what we got going on is the They Shall Live podcast. How did you and Jeff meet, and what intrigued you about doing a podcast?
Oh, Jeff and I met, I want to say about 8 years ago, there was a film festival here in Wilmington, and we were both panelists. So I was casting, he was actor, you know, on the panel for this film festival. And I had seen him over the years, too, because of just being in casting. But we were literally sitting right next to each other. So, we got to know each other and everything. So we have stayed friends over the years, and just like whole different level. You know, it's not just acting, casting. It was like spiritual level and other. He's such an interesting guy. Like, he's really a good person. He's got so many talents and focus. What am I trying to say? Like different things that are very meaningful for him. And so Buddhism was one of them, and you know, all sorts of different things that we would talk about. This podcast is a very recent development because we were chatting one time about perhaps producing a show, like it was almost like a reality, but like one of those lifestyle type of shows. That's what was kind of the most current thing on the table. And when the pandemic hit, it kind of just like shot it all to hell, of course, because we couldn't shoot episodes in person. And so we're like, okay, well, we'll kind of put that on the back burner. And this podcast, I can't remember how, like, I think it was just a spark idea that Jeff had, like, because he's real inspired by like Joe Rogan's podcast and others. And so he just drew it out there. And, you know, I was definitely interested in helping. You're helping. And then his friend Chase, who I had only met like one time, Chase lives here in Wilmington also. It just came together. And I'm telling you, he is really inspired and pushing this forward in a beautiful way. And it's fun. I mean, I don't know. I'm having fun.
Oh, I'm having fun. I just kind
of. We don't know where it's going or what we're even going to talk about. It's just very organic and goes. So it's fun.
Well, that's just it. Like he asked me to come on, I guess, from doing my show, and he liked our interaction, and of course, he likes a lot of my Facebook posts, which I guess you kind of just keep scrolling. If you see them.
I've seen them for sure, yeah.
But it's just that my personality is that I started this. A friend asked me to co-host with him and if I would cover at a radio station just outside of Philly, one of them local buyer time stations. And I said, sure, it could be fun. So from there, I went to covering hockey games. And he wanted to bring some NASCAR coverage into there, so I started getting credentialed to races nearby. And I think one of my qualities is I can schmooze pretty well, and I make a lot of friends. So, you know, I was able to get drivers on. And I've had different walks of life people on the show just because, like, in the off season, I can't be playing reruns all the time. Nobody will listen. So I'd have different things on, like different people from different walks of life, like yourself or Beauty Queens. Or I had a Miss America on, a couple of Miss New Jerseys and Miss Delaware, you know, that type of stuff. And then sometimes how they interact with racing, like Anne Marie and all the Miss Sprint Cups. And then Jeff played Dale Earnhardt, which related to racing. So I had him on. And now with all these other things going on, I like to promote stuff that he's doing, that now that we're doing with the podcast and you. And, you know, your background is intriguing, how you went from Long Island, New Orleans, Yale, down to Wilmington, North Carolina, becoming a casting director. And I'm just fascinated at what goes into the production of a show, movie. Maybe commercials aren't so much, but because it's just one of those things. And, yeah, just that one thing leads to another. And something that interests me, I'll bring the person on and talk about. And hopefully they'll have a good time and want to come back, like yourself. Hopefully you'll have a good time and want to come back. But we'll be doing the podcast together. I guess we have a new one this weekend on Sunday. I had to miss last one because it was a guest. Hopefully that went well. I did. I'll have to share it on my page when it does come up, though. What did I miss?
Oh, it was fun. It was just myself, Chase, and Jeff. And this time, you know how we generally stick to, like, you know, current topics like COVID or masks or whatever, the riots and Black Lives Matter, whatever, like the current stuff in the news. This time we kind of went into the direction of religion and psychology. We were like talking about narcissists and interesting psychology stuff. Yeah, it was fun.
Damn, I wish I made that one.
He posed like a number of topics at the beginning of the podcast for us, because I think Jeff's starting to get feedback from folks listening, and they're suggesting various topics for us. And religion, narcissism, you know, like fake people, something like that, those were kind of the topics. So I think this is something that he's going to continue to explore. So don't worry, there's going to be plenty to talk about when you come back this week.
Okay, cool. So They Still Live.
Yes.
I like your little dating game bit. That was pretty good. And
that's a whole other thing, Vinny. Like, that's what I'm saying. Jeff is so inspired. He's so inspired. He's just taken in all these crazy, awesome directions. This is like he's adding skits. And so he's an actor, obviously. I do act mostly on stage here in Wilmington. And so we were just hashing out some ideas. And he's like, maybe we could do a skit. I was like, all right, what do you want? You know, we just came up with some characters. Of course, I'm from Long Island. So the Long Island accent is right, you know, at the ready. So
yeah, that's what I said. Is a New Yorker
that character.
That's why I said on the our group message, is a New Yorker playing a New Yorker really acting?
Right. I just have to conjure the accent again from my psyche.
It doesn't go away.
Pretty much it.
Wow. It's been an hour.
It's been an hour and 3 minutes. Goodness. That was quick.
Yeah. Welcome to my show. I guess, like I said, when you get to having a conversation, the time sure flies. And Jen, I guess I'll, if I don't have to work Saturday and or Sunday, we might have to move the time to 8, unless he's got that guest on at 8. But that's one thing about his, oh, I can move the time on here. I've done it before. I'd like to thank you for joining me on your debut appearance on Garage Talk Live, and hopefully you'll be back.
Thank you so much for having me, Vinny. It was really fun.
All right, take care. Go tend to business. I know you got some things you're going to have done shortly, so I will be chatting. Don't worry about that. All right. Take care now.
Okay. Take care.
Bye. Right, bye-bye. There you have Jen Inguli, casting director, actress in the theater. And that was a fast episode. We'll get to racing next week again. There's so darn many races, it's hard to keep track of. Anyway, that's our show for today. I'm Vinny. Good day, good racing. We'll see you all next week. Bye now.